I want to tell you a little bit about Cal Farley's and what we've been doing. Cal Farley's has a relatively long history. We started in 1939. For some of the organizations I've met here, you know, we're still kids in terms of the lifespan of the organization. But like most organizations that I'm familiar with, there had been cycles of sort of what the approach was, what the philosophy was, that kind of thing. And it wasn't far enough back in the past that we were very behavioral-based, very punitive, and so there's still some strains of that within our culture. We've been working really hard for a good bit of time now to change that, but it's still an ongoing process, and it's been interesting. But I'm real happy with the progress that we're making, the progress that we made this last year. Generally, year to year, we keep a lot of data. We try to learn from what we've done in a lot more detail than this. But usually, if we've made a lot of stride in staying fuller, you know, and making better utilization of the facility, we have a large campus that's almost like a small town. And we have 275 kids on average on the campus. And then the adults and their own personal children that live there make quite a community there. And it's 45 minutes from the next town. So we're sort of our own little town. So this last year, what I started to say is generally when we have an increase in like census, we'll have a decrease in other areas. You know, just everything kind of goes up and down. But this was an exceptional year. We had an 11% increase in census, which for our facility meant that we had an additional 9,297 days in care. So that was kids getting more help to that side. Staff retention, we were able to decrease turnover, and that added a lot more stability this last year. And then the campus stability. Now, I don't measure everything by the number of incidents because I'm not looking for zero incidents, because if there's zero incidents, that means that everything is being controlled and there's opportunities that are lost and so on. So I'm not looking for zero incidents. But it was significant to me that while we had an increase in our census, we were also to actually show a little more stabilization in the behavior and the campus. And then an 8% increase in success rate, and we did all of that while we had a 9% decrease in our cost per day in care. And that follows some big cuts we've had previously. So, I mean, we just keep tightening and tightening the belt, but we were able to add, you know, days and all. So I was proud of that, taking every opportunity I can to tell everybody I get a chance to tell. Because next year the numbers may not be so good, and I'll show you a different slide maybe then. This is a part of our culture at Cal Farley's. It's a long heritage of, we are the original Boys Ranch, if you know what that is. And in fact, for name recognition, we've kept the name Cal Farley's Boys Ranch, even though we have girls on our campus as well. Kind of like if you're familiar with Boys Town in the United States, we tracked what they did. When they changed their name, they actually went back. They started off Boys Town. They went to Boys and Girls Town, USA. They lost a lot of name recognition, so they went back and changed it again, spent tons of money to do that because they had lost a lot of money with the name change. So we have girls going off to the university and counselors saying, this can't be true that you graduated from Boys Ranch ISD. You know, and they have to struggle with that sometimes. This is at our rodeo. We have a rodeo once a year. Our kids participate in the rodeo. This is just one of our small bulls. I'm a little embarrassed to tell you that we actually strap kids onto larger bulls with their permission. But it's interesting, and we can talk more about that later. And then I'll share some more inappropriate stories. So part of our model is based on the model of leadership and service. And you will see a similarity between it and the Circle of Courage, and then other models, needs-based models that are utilized. But we found it very important in our work, and it has worked very well with everything else that we do, and I'll go into that a little bit. So This part you're not familiar with because I think it's, of course, everybody's concerned about safety and knows that kids need to not just be safe, but have felt safety. We use that term a lot because a lot of times staff will be thinking, well, they're safe. But we go beyond that, as many of you do, I'm sure, and want to be sure that they have felt safety because that can be a very different perspective, especially based on their histories. So that's in the middle and core to everything else that happens. And then you'll see a direct link here. It's a part of our mission and our vision. And so that term stayed the same. Achievement was a little differently worded in our vision, so we stuck with that to kind of have those themes carry on out. And then we look at power, and that being that we want kids. There was quite a discussion within our agency when we talked about these. I don't think there's any explanation needed, but power, at least within our agency, you know, there were agency members of our agency that wanted to say, shouldn't that be empowerment? And I'm saying, well, you if you empower somebody, what that means is you've got the power. And you're letting them have a little bit of it, you know, for a while. And so that if you empower them, you can disempower them. And so we were being real picky with words and so on because we were going to stick to this and refer to it a lot. And so those were important discussions within our agency. So kids have power within our agency. Now it's balanced like in any other system. But that was important to us. And you, in other you know, in the circle of courage, that would be independence. So that would relate to that. And then we went a little broader than generosity. And, you know, I've talked to Larry Brentro and purpose and so on is certainly included when he talks about generosity. But my agency started as a faith-based agency, and so that's still core to a lot of things that are done there. And so a sense of purpose was important to us. And there's been a lot of discussions around, is that the best word for that piece of this need, you know, that we all have? And that discussion is still going on. I'm not sure that we've decided that purpose is the best word. So when I'm done in the 5 minutes, if anyone has a suggestion, jump in there. And then this is in the outside ring that also touches on every one of those. We have adventure, and I'll spend a little more time on that because that may be a little more unique as far as a needs-based model. But through our experiences, we all know that youth are drawn to novelty of different sorts and sometimes a sense of, you know, a little risky behavior and so on. And it's not always in the same way, in the same type. But, you know, the more we learn about the brain and the brain wiring and so on, it's actually hardwired there. And it manifests itself in different ways. But and it doesn't just start like in adolescence. Think about a two-year-old. When there's a massive amount of new connections being made, it's very important that part of what's driving their behavior is they are into everything because they're learning everything. And it's not, you know, for a while later in their development that there's some pruning done and they're able to, you know, focus more and so on. But that we see like two-year-old behavior where they're, you know, into everything. We include that as a sense of or the need for adventure. And it continues on throughout the lifespan in different ways. But adventure is not just and a lot of these you could say the same thing. It's not just a need that we focus on. It is also we hope an outcome. It's a perspective on things that you can take. You know, if you take a bunch of kids on a camping trip in rough weather, some come back and it was a disaster, but some, you know, talk about, oh, this happened and this happened. And they have that perspective that they see things as an adventure and so on. So that's what we want in both kids and staff. But what we've been doing more of here lately is taking that model and then looking more and more at our kids' brains. And the brain is developed primarily, you know, for a sense of survival, or to survive, excuse me, not a sense of survival. And so we're hardwired with some things in the beginning, but then everything after that is through our experiences, okay? And it makes a huge difference. And we used to think, for instance, that, you know, before we were verbal, you know, in infants, that things that happened then didn't matter so much because you couldn't remember them, that sort of thing. And we know now that that's totally not true, because that's at a time when there's more wiring being done at this time through experience than any other time. And it's in lower parts of the brain that, just like language, there are opportune times for language development. There are opportune times for this wiring to be laid down as far as emotions, self-soothing, that kind of thing. And then how you go back and revisit that wiring and help with that wiring is different, because it is that lower structure that you're addressing, and it's not always addressed in the ways that we would address things. So we look at how brains are similar. We look at how brains are different. And, of course, that's everything from genetics to their experience and so on. And then we look at how that's affected things. So I want to try, if everybody can see the screen, I want you to watch this gentleman pronounce, if some of you have already seen this or are familiar with the McGurk effect, but I want you to watch the gentleman speak and then tell me what he's saying, please. Okay, what'd you hear? Da-da? Da-da? Anybody hear anything different? So D-A? G-A? G-L? G-L? You heard B-A? Mm-hmm. Okay. Watch again. Okay. This time, don't watch. Did you? Three or four different things? Okay. So here's the most common experience with that. And it's based on your history and how things have been wired, okay? So if you watch him, most generally what you hear is da-da or ga-ga, okay? But what you're actually seeing and hearing is two different recordings, one where they take the video and the other where they take the audio, and then they mix those two together. Okay, so the video is of ga-ga or da-da. I've read that it's two different things, so I'm not sure which, but it's the main thing is it's not ba-ba, okay? The audio is ba-ba, but you can watch it over and over again, and especially when you have the screen right in front of you, you can turn off whether you're hearing that sound. So what do we hear with? You know, we generally think we hear with our ears, but actually our sight can overpower our sensory perception and understanding of what's actually being passed on based on our experience and rules that have been made. Because we have learned through experience that you don't hear ba-ba when the lips don't come together. And so when all that is mixed, unawares to us, it says that's breaking the rule, it can't be that, it must be this, and it changes what you hear, it changes your experience. So our previous experience filters our experience, our current experience. And I think that's very important to understand as we're working with kids and are, you know, living in this world with them. And so depending on where these experiences happen, because the development of the brain happens at different times, like language, you know, with the opportune time to learn a language and then how it gets harder and harder, things go on. The same thing happens as far as windows of opportunity and development. And so those areas of the brain being more basic functioning, you know, at the base, and then becoming more sophisticated as you go up through the layers of the brain, and covers these things. And so we are addressing things in different way, but just through experience, like we may focus on certain approaches on what we do. And I'll actually get back to that, but I wanted to say another thing that's important through this. Bruce Perry, years and years ago, wrote an article, I thought it was a phenomenal article, on how states become traits. And so if you can think about a bad day that you've had, and then you go home and something little happens and you overreact to what that is, that's because you're still in that state of heightened arousal, and you're reacting in that way. It's filtering your experiences. It's affecting your behavior. Kids who are in those earlier periods of development and have prolonged experiences or very heightened experiences, it affects their wiring, and they can actually experience something as a trait that would actually be just a state for us. It goes back and forth. So there's certain things that we do through the experience that helps those kids learn to manage this and do some rewiring on a much lower level. And we do it in some very unsophisticated ways. We do a lot of horseback riding, because riding along in that motion and talking and connecting with someone else, it's very similar to that motion with being in the womb, and it's this rhythmic, kind of a beat as you go along. And then if you're a calm environment and so on, then that helps actually tie back to lower portions of the brain that experience, and can tie it to these, you know, interpersonal connections. So that's real important to us. But as we look to see where we want to focus some of those experiences and be more purposeful with some of those experiences, we actually use Bruce Perry's tool. We're in a two-year process of certification where we look at their history of development and what's happened. We look at their current behavior, and we sort of then triangulate what's developed. So this would be age typical for 14 to 16. This would be a map that we get based on that history and the behavior that we're experiencing now. And then we would change our focus as far as what we do and how we do things with that child to work on some of these lower parts, because these lower areas of the brain can't be reached very readily, you know, through cognition and through speech and so on. But the most, so this is what we're after, but the most important tool in doing this and affecting these child's brains is the staff. And so I think this is one of the most important things that we do, excuse me, is this model. It's the model of leadership and service. And so it's meant for, this is, you know, how we work with kids, but it's also how we work with staff. We are developing all of our tools so that everything we do helps staff feel a sense of safety. And we want to do things that help staff have a sense of belonging within our community and our culture. So think about it. If you work in a place where you feel safe, now it doesn't mean that you won't be put in some tough situations, but you know there's support and so on. So if you're in a situation where you know tough things might happen, but you'll be covered, you have a sense of connection, you're tied to given tasks that you feel like you're equipped to deal with, and you feel like you're empowered to do the things you need to do, and there is a purpose to what you do, then the outcome for you as a staff will be a sense of adventure, and then there will be that resonant leadership between staff and kids and so on. So that's what I wanted to share. Are there any questions? All right.
Want to use
the mic. Oh, okay. I won't need one. Thank you very much.
Tom, just one quick question about the brain mapping. How many staff have you got trained in looking at that work?
We're actually developing tools internally at Cal Farley's that work with the stuff that Perry has developed. And also Karen Purvis. If you're not familiar with her work, you ought to check it out. It's very much about how to be with these kids who have dealt with trauma and so on. So we're taking all of that, and as far as the brain mapping, if you look at a pyramid, the top of the pyramid is the group of staff who are actually doing brain maps. It's very few, and it would be some who have the qualification to do that, have been through the two-year certification. But during this period, everybody is getting training that all, you know, parallels what we're talking about here, so that when we talk about this development and how we're going to try to tap into some of this, that they're in tune. Everything is in concert together with the kids and the experiences that we're trying to provide for them. That answer your question? So you've been there. You kind of know our staff. We've got about 20 that are being trained to do the maps, and we've got about a dozen who are actually doing them on an ongoing basis for the whole population there. Yes?
Is there an example of power in terms of the young people?
More and more, we're trying. A lot of times, the problem solving is done by staff, and so more and more, we're saying, okay, we've got an issue here, You know, how are we going to solve it? And it can be, you know, a behavioral issue about, you know, a privilege being abused and so on. For instance, we used to not have music players allowed, the little iPod or iPhones, that kind of thing. And now at our older kids, they're carrying telephones and so on because we want them to be able to have power, and we're not just controlling everything by limiting their experience. But, of course, with that comes responsibility, which is also a part of power. And so we do that. But also in the town, I've put a concept around it. We call it Community as Lab, which also the acronym then becomes Cal, which ties to Cal Farley. And we've got a whole town there. And so we're getting the kids more and more involved in the problem solving of what you have in a community. Everything from trash pickup and all the food deliveries, all those things, and the kids are becoming more and more involved in that problem solving. They've always been involved in the labor there, you know, and helping out, but not the other end of it where we had to solve some things. Somebody else? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, we tried to incorporate Perry's theory and model some years ago, but we found it very expensive because we didn't have the opportunity to have horse riding on campus all of that. But apart from that, we tried to equip a gym.
Did what?
A gym. We had a gym, and mm-hmm. an equipped gym to do the exercises that might compensate for the mm-hmm. development of different parts of the brain, particularly that lower region of the brain. But that's what made it too expensive, and we really didn't take off. But it just seemed to be one of the models that was hitting most of the...
One of the things, because I spent time with Bruce before we entered into a very expensive two-year contract and so on, so we're paying a lot for the experience. I think he's charging Texans more than anyone else because he's those are words from his mouth. He lived there. He's been very frustrated. He said, "Fine, if we're going to work, whoever participates from Texas will pay dearly." Canadians got a much better deal. Oregon got a great deal. We didn't get such a great deal. Yeah, but what was very important to me is we didn't have to bring in a lot of new things. I talked to him and said, "Can we take this and make it work with what we've got?" Now we've got incredible resources. We've got horses and all kinds of different experience, ropes courses or challenge courses, whatever your term is, and we've got all that. But Bruce was very helpful in saying, you know. We know kids with animals is good, but he helped us understand even more why brushing a horse is a powerful therapeutic experience, okay? And actually down to detail about what area of the brain in the lower stem, you know, that you're actually affecting there and so on. So I think with the right consultation, the right people, I think anyone, because it's how it's developed. You know, the brain doesn't naturally develop doing those exercises and all. It's how do you go back and address some of that? But if it's built originally with natural experiences, everyday life experiences, it can be rebuilt. But you have to be more purposeful to try to get more of that and tie more of that in. So, I think it's real important. I don't think it's real therapeutic for something to be totally different in their experience to address this. We good? All right. Thank you all. His hands next.